It's time for Kent Neitzert in the Garden, brought to you by Neitzert's Greenhouse and Florist, heading to Easter weekend. How big are Easter lilies these days, as far as either sales or people growing them?
I was going to say they're about this tall.
Smart aleck.
Pretty good. I think that they've been pretty steady for the last maybe 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Most of the holidays are not as big as they were 20 years ago in terms of flower sales. A lot of that's probably due, on our part, from all the box stores that are around that handle Easter lilies that come in. One of the things that I noticed this year was, of course, Easter lily bulbs are planted back in somewhere around December to January 1st, and they're cooled then to, they're either cooled in the case or they're pot cooled to break dormant, to set those buds and stuff. And they're either supplied from Europe, Holland, or a lot of them come off the West Coast. And a couple of suppliers this year supplied bulbs that were that turned out to be really short plants. So, you know, it's kind of Easter lily for short people, I guess.
Midget lilies.
Oh, and you know, when you talk about that, you're talking about hundreds of thousands of Easter lilies at some, you know, some grower may have 20,000 Easter lilies that are only about 8 or 10 inches tall, which makes it real tough to sell a successful crop.
Yeah.
Luckily, we didn't get those. I don't know how we lucked out, but our Easter lilies look really nice this year. I just love the smell of Easter lilies. When you walk into the greenhouse and you've got, we grow about 200, 250 Easter lily plants, and that just, you can smell it in the when you step in the front door. It's just a really sweet smelling plant.
All right. So Kent Neitzert in the garden with us this morning as we talk about something that's not so sweet.
Yeah.
Grubs.
Grubs, yeah. It's spring's been late getting here this year, but finally some of the lawns are starting to green up. That is some of them, but there I've noticed even more this year than probably a lot of springs. There are big brown patches in your lawn that look kind of like a blob that is just kind of irregularly shaped around the edges, and there's just no grass growing in it. And sometimes you'll see a flock of birds out feeding in the middle of that brown area. Well, they're feeding on the grubs that are in the lawn. Before you actually go through and say, we have a grub problem, let's put something on it to control it, you want to make sure that that's what's a problem. And to do that, you simply just dig up a patch of soil about the size of a Frisbee or a dinner plate, to about 2 inches down, and examine what you find in there. You may find a lot of little grubs. They're about a half inch long. They're white, feet near one end, and a big puffy bulging tail on the other, abdomen-like on the other end. And most of those grubs are European chafer grubs. We've had a real problem, for the last 6 or 8 years with the European chafer beetle grubs getting in the lawns. And if that's the case, then we want to try to control them. A good, healthy lawn can survive about 5 grubs per square foot. When it gets more dense population than that, then the lawn starts to suffer, especially those lawns that aren't irrigated, because what happens is the grub chews the roots off on the grass itself, and so the grass has a real short root system and is unable to go very deep to get moisture. Okay. If the lawn is irrigated, then all that moisture is right near the surface anyway, so that you don't have that problem. And we won't run into that grub problem as much. If you've got that grub problem, then what you really need to look understand is the life cycle of the grub. The European chafers and Japanese beetle both give us grubs that are problems in the lawn, and they lay eggs in the middle of the summer, early July, late June. Those eggs hatch in about 10 days, and then we have those grubs that are starting to feed throughout that early period, mid-period of the summer. And they mature in the fall of the year, and usually about mid-October, it starts getting cold enough in the lawns that the grubs go deep into the ground and winter down there. And then as we warm up here again in the spring, they come back up towards the surface and start feeding. So what we're experiencing right now are mature grubs. And there are two types of chemicals we use for grub control. One is a preventative, and one is to get rid of them as a curative. Now, right now, we don't want to use preventative chemicals because we're not going to prevent them. They're already there. So what we have to do is put a substance on the lawn that is a curative. And so you need to be careful what you go to for the grub control. One of the things that the chemicals that you use now is 7, which has carbaryl in it. And the other is a chemical called trichlorophan, and you'll find that in Bayer Advanced 24-Hour Grub Killer. Those are the two that are generally found that are commercially, that's the trade name of them.
Mm-hmm.
If we try to put preventatives on, doesn't do any good. And if in the summertime we put those curative varieties on, it doesn't do any good either. So you want to be careful at what you select for grub control. You just don't want to grab a bag that says grub control and put it on. A really good website to check this information out is called turf.msu.edu. And there is a list of bulletins on lawn care. And one, I think the first one listed there is grub control. And at the end of that bulletin, then, is just a long list of about 9 different trade names of chemicals that are on the market. And it tells you when to use them, whether we use them in the spring or in the fall.
It's probably their most popular bulletin, I would think, probably.
Yeah, it probably really is. And
we've got problems with them.
Yeah, and so if you have those grub control problems, it's time to kind of put that control, those control mechanisms on. And then we need to reseed because there's nothing there that's alive anymore, and you got to reseed and get those going. Now, you can reseed without putting a chemical on, but the grubs are going to chew on that grass once it gets going anyway.
Kent Neitzert in the garden with us this morning, about 5 minutes before 8 o'clock. Questions for Kent, 279-1590. So once it's gone dormant, once it's gone brown, it's not going to come back, is what you're saying.
Yeah, most likely, yeah. If you have a dead spot in your lawn that's about the size of a dinner plate, usually it will grow in from the sides. And usually if it's only that big, it's probably not a grub problem. Grub problems are the size of your living room on most, your kitchen, your living room on those lawns, and really huge areas that are starting to take over.
To put on those curatives, are they a granule powder?
Can usually get them. Like 7, we use 7 to spray for other problems. You can get a dust. We use powder and mix it as a spray and spray it as other insect problems. You can also find it as granular. I think for most homeowners, granulars applied are probably the
easiest, right?
Easiest to apply. Yeah. Right. Put it in a broadcast spreader and pull it across the lawn.
Right. 279-1590 for Kent Neitzert in the garden.
When you have an occasion to buy flowers, does where you shop make a difference? Well, if knowledgeable sales personnel, quality of product, and value for the dollars you spend are important to you, then it's important you make Neitzert's Greenhouse and Florist your florist. Whatever the occasion, wherever you need to send flowers, call Neitzert's at 278-4148 and let them take care of your order. They'll handle your needs with a personal and professional touch and stand behind the work to your satisfaction. Call Neitzert's today or stop out on Fisk Road, 1.5 miles south of US 12, and see if you don't agree that there is a difference, and the difference is Neitzert's.
About 3 in front of 8, AM 1590 and FM 95.5 WTVB. Couple of questions on the line. Let's go to the first one here this morning for Kent Neitzert in the garden. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead.
Good morning.
I've got hydrangea, rose of Sharon, forsythia, and lilac. Trees, shrubbery, and mm-hmm. I wondered when is the best time to trim those.
From a plant standpoint, it doesn't make any difference when you prune them, other than you don't want to prune late in the summer, early fall, to encourage, because pruning encourages new growth, and you want that new growth to harden off before we get the cold winter setting in, otherwise it won't survive the winter. However, if you prune your hydrangea, your forsythia, your lilac, now you're cutting flowers off. And if you prune hard enough, you cut all the flowers off. So generally speaking, we recommend that flowering shrubs be pruned immediately after they're through flowering. That way you're not removing any flowers, and you encourage the new growth to develop, and it has time to mature and throughout the next part of the year.
And what about old canes on hydrangea, should they be cut off or can they be left on there?
You can cut them off anytime you want. The problem is that those old canes are what has the flower buds in it. So, and hydrangeas will set those buds come right out of dormancy, and they'll bloom relatively early in the late spring, early summer. So again, if you prune them right now, you're going to prune off flower buds. I'd wait till after they flower. Then you can prune that old cane as far back as you want to develop. If you want the plant to be a lot shorter, then you cut that cane back quite a ways.
Okay.
All right.
One more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
We had a lot of our evergreens chewed up by the deer.
Mm-hmm.
When I say a lot, I mean they're almost non-existent.
Mm-hmm.
Do they revive themselves?
They will probably come back. They will take a couple of years maybe to get really back dense foliage on them. So they should come back and give some green this year, but they're going to look a little sparse this first season.
All right, good luck with it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Speaking of evergreens, anything particular you should be doing with them right now?
Well, probably just as soon as they start to grow, we can start any pruning you want to do on those because they're not flowering. You might put a little fertilizer on them. I generally, when I fertilize a lawn, just run the lawn spreader close enough to the shrubs and stuff so that we spread a little fertilizer right in the flower beds and shrub beds.
Okay. All right. So let's head to line two. Hi. Go ahead with a question for Kent Neitzert in the garden.
Oak wilt.
Yeah.
What? Anything you can do for it?
To my knowledge, I haven't researched it that much, but I don't know that there is. Oak wilt is a disease that attacks oak trees. It's spread from one tree to the next, generally through open wounds of sorts. So one of the things that we encourage people not to do, and that is prune oak trees during the growing season. So oak, we want to generally, if you have some pruning or cutting of limbs to do, you want to do that in the wintertime when they're dormant so that we don't run into those problems with that wound and has time to seal over a little bit before we start getting into the season that where these diseases are actively growing.
All right. Kent Neitzert in the garden during the week. You can catch him at the greenhouse, 1.5 miles south of U.S. 12 on Fisk Road. Thursday mornings, catch him here on the radio, and we have an archive of his shows as well on our website, our podcast as well. You can check those out as well. I had someone wanted to ask you about. Have you ever heard of magnolia snow? I suppose that was the description of what we got earlier this week, was a magnolia snow. I thought it was just annoying.
No,
snow.
Not now, yeah. So, pain in the butt snow.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. But hopefully it's gone
for
now. And growing season, once growing season hits, it's going to be...
It's going to be big. People are really pent up trying to get going. And, you know, the vegetable gardeners, their ranks are growing year after year because there's nothing better than locally grown or fresh grown vegetables. You know, tomatoes that didn't come from the valleys of California, that maybe came from the other side of the street. You know a little bit more about the history of the plant when it comes from locally grown.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks. We'll talk next week. Kent Neitzert in the garden with us this morning.